I draw my line at the dog who said good morning, and disappeared in a thin, greenish vapor. He is a symbol of the false and arbitrary and unreasonable and inconsistent, though of course also the reasonable and consistent limit, which everybody must somewhere set, in order to pretend to be. You can't fool me with that dog story. 6. Conservatism is our opposition. But I am in considerable sympathy with conservatives. I am often lazy, myself. It's evenings, when I'm somewhat played out, when I'm likely to be most conservative. Everything that is highest and noblest in my composition is most pronounced when I'm not good for much. I may be quite savage, mornings, but, as my energy plays out, I become nobler and nobler, and lazier and conservativer. Most likely my last utterance will be a platitude, if I've been dying long enough. If not, I shall probably laugh. I like to read my evening newspaper comfortably. And it is uncomfortably that I come upon any new idea, or suggestion of the new, in an evening newspaper. It's a botheration, and I don't understand it, and it will cost me some thinking. Oh, well, I'll clip it out, anyway. But where are the scissors? But they aren't. Has anybody a pin? Nobody has. There was a time when one could maneuver over to the edge of a carpet, without having to leave one's chair, and pull up a tack. But everybody has rugs, nowadays. Oh, well, let it go. Something in a newspaper about a mysterious hair clipper. This is a new department of data, though hair stealing links with other mysterious thefts. Where's a pin? Oh, well, there's nothing in particular about this matter of hair clipping. A petty thief stole hair to sell, of course. Vague suggestions hanging over from reading of various phases of black magic, but, if there is a market for human hair, hair clippers are accounted for still. And so I could go on, every now and then, for many years, feeling a haunt of a new idea, but feeling more comfortable, if doing nothing about it. But, daytimes, I go to libraries, and, if several times, close together, something that is new to me, in newspapers, attracts my attention, I get the power somewhere to make a note of it. These vague, new ideas that flutter momentarily in every mind, sometimes they're as hard to catch as is the moment they flutter in. It's like trying to pin a butterfly without catching it. They're gone. They can't develop, because one doesn't, or can't, note them, and collect notes. We'd all be somewhat enlightened if that would be any good to us were it not for easy chairs. Where's a pin? Hereafter I'm going to have a pet porcupine around the house. One can't learn much and also be comfortable. One can't learn much and let anybody else be comfortable. 2 cases of hairdressers' windows broken, and women's switches stolen. Probably to sell to other hairdressers. I noted this, just as an oddity. London Daily Chronicle, July 9, 1913. Paris wealthy engineer, named Lerangeur, arrested. At Lerangeur's residence, the police found locks of hair of 94 women. I put this item with others upon freaks of collectors. In Oklahoma City, July, 1907, somebody collected ears. Bodies of 3 men, ears cut off. In April, 1913, a collector, who was known as Jack the Slipper Snatcher, operated in the subways of New York City. Girl going up the steps of a subway exit, 1 foot up from a step, the snatch of her slipper. The fantastic, or the amusing, but it is as close to the appalling as is the beautiful to the hideous. The murderer of the Connors child, in New York, in July, 1916, hacked hair from his victim. I have only 2 records of male victims of hair clippers. I conceive that once upon a time abundant whiskers were tempting. Where do manufacturers of false whiskers get their material? Both of these victims were children. There was a case of 3 gypsy women, who waylaid a boy, aged 8, and cut off his hair. That they were gypsies may be of occult suggestion, but this could be simply the theft of something that could be sold. A case is told of, in The People, London, January 23, 1921. The residents of Glenshamrock Farm, Auchinleck, Ayrshire, Scotland, awoke one morning to find that during the night a burglar had made off with various articles. There were screams from the bedroom of a young female member of the household. Upon awakening, she had learned that her hair had been cut off. I say that this case was told of, but a case of what? And, in the New York Sunday, March 7, 1928, a case of what? An old man had entered the home of Angelo Nappi, 83 and a half Garside Street, Newark, NJ, and had cut off the hair of his three little daughters. Old age and youth, male and female, there is the haunt, in stories of hair clippers, of something that is not of hair selling. If Jack the Slipper Snatcher were in the second-hand business, he'd have maneuvered girls into having both feet in the air. I take a story from The Medium and Daybreak, December 13, 1889. It was copied from the Brockville, Ontario, Daily Times, November 13. There were doings in the home of George Dagg, a farmer, living in the township of Clarendon, province of Quebec, Canada. With Dagg lived his wife, two young children, and a little girl, aged 11, Dina McLean, who had been adopted from an orphan asylum. The report from which I quote was the result of investigations by Percy Woodcock. I know that that sounds fictitious, but just the same, Percy Woodcock was a well-known painter. Also, Mr. Woodcock was a spiritualist. It could be that he colored as much on paper as on canvas. The first of the uncanny occurrences, as they are so persistently called by persons who do not realize how common they are, was upon September 15. Window panes broke. There were unaccountable fires, as many as 8 a day. Stones of unknown origin were thrown. A large stone struck one of the children, and strange to say, it did not hurt her in the least. And I give my opinion that, in comments upon my writings, my madness has been overemphasized. Of course, I couldn't pass any alienist's examination, but could any alienist? But when I come upon a detail like this of stones striking people harmlessly, in an Ontario newspaper, and have noted the same detail in a story in a Constantinople newspaper, and have come upon it in newspapers of Adelaide, South Australia, and Cornwall, England, and other places, and when I note that it is no standardized detail of ghost stories, so that probably not one of the writers had ever heard of anything of the kind before, I'd consider myself sane and reasonable in giving heed to this. If there were sanity and reasonableness. One afternoon, little Dina felt her hair, which hung in a long braid down her back, suddenly pulled, and, on crying out, the family found her braid almost cut off, simply hanging by a few hairs. On the same day, the little boy said that something had pulled his hair all over. Immediately it was seen by his mother that his hair, also, had been cut off, in chunks, as it were, all over his head. Woodcock told of a voice that was heard. This is an element that does not appear in the great majority of cases of poltergeist disturbances. His story is of conversations that were carried on between him and an invisible being. There was a feud between the Daggs and neighbors named Wallace, and the voice accused Mrs. Wallace of having sent him, or her, or it, or whatever, to persecute the Daggs. Most of the time, the house was crowded. When this accusation was heard, a number of farmers went to the home of the Wallaces, and returned with Mrs. Wallace. The story is that the voice again accused Mrs. Wallace, but then made statements that were so inconsistent that it was not believed. It was an obscene voice, and Mr. Woodcock was shocked. He reasoned with it, pointing out that there were farmer essays present. And the voice was ashamed of itself. It repented. It sang a hymn and departed. I take something from the Religio-Philosophical Journal, October 4, 1873, and following issues, as copied from the Durand, Wisconsin, Times, and other newspapers. Home of Mr. Lynch, 14 miles from Menominee, Wisconsin, had moved from Indiana, a few years before, and was living with a second wife and the four children of the first wife. She had died shortly before he had moved. Lynch went to town one day, and returned with a dress for his wife. Soon afterward, this dress was found in the barn, slashed to shreds. Objects all over the house vanished. Lynch bought another dress. This was found, in the barn, cut down to fit one of the children. Eggs rose from tables, teacups leaped, and a pan of soft soap wandered from room to room. One of the children, a boy, aged 6, was thought to be playing tricks, because phenomena centered around him. Nobody lambasted him until he confessed, but he was tied in a chair teacups as lively as ever. There was the usual openness. No midnight mysteries of a haunted house. Sightseers were arriving in such numbers that there was no room in the house for them. Several hundred of them lounged outside, sitting on fences or leaning against anything that would hold them up, ready for a dash into the house, at any announcement of doings. One day one of the children, named Rena, was standing close to Mrs. Lynch. Her hair was sheared off, close to her scalp, and vanished. There have been single instances, and there have been hair clipping scares that were attributed to mass psychology. Also, I have noted cases in which girls were accused of having cut off their own hair, hoping to take up some newspaper space. My only reason for doubt is the satisfactory endings of these accounts, with statements that the girls had confessed. There were accounts in the London newspapers of December 2 and 10, 1922, of a scare in places east and west of London. In a street, in Uxbridge, Middlesex, a woman found that her braid had been cut off. She had been aware of no such operation, but remembered that, in a crowd, her hat had been pushed over her eyes. According to the stories, women were terrorized by a vanishing man. Disappeared as if by magic. It is an uncatchable again, a defiant fellow, operating openly, as if confident that he could not be caught. Note that these are not ghost stories. They are stories of human beings, who seem to have ghostly qualities, or powers. Doris Whiting, aged 17, approaching her home, in the village of Orpington, saw a man, leaning on the gate. As she was passing him, he grabbed her, and cut off her hair. The girl screamed, and her father and brother ran to her. They searched, but the clipper was unfindable. A maid, employed by Mrs. Glanfield, of Crofton Hall, Orpington, was pounced upon by a man, who hacked off a handful of her hair. He vanished. There was excitement in Orpington, at the end of a bus route. A girl exclaimed that much of her hair had been cut off. Merely this does not seem mysterious, it seems that a deft fellow could have done this without being seen by the other passengers. But other girls were saying whatever girls say when they discover that their hair has been cut off. At Enfield, a girl named Brand, employed as a typist, at the Constitutional Club, was near the clubhouse, one morning, about 8 o'clock, when a man grabbed her and cut off her hair. No trace of him was found, though the search was taken up a minute after the outrage.